This time on the Art Beat, we'll meet Doug Nazelrode, the master luthier at the Appalachian School of Luthery in Hindman, Kentucky. Doug, what exactly drew you into this life in music?
A pretty girl. She offered to give me guitar lessons, and I thought that was a great idea. No, I loved music. I always wanted a way to, you know, get into it, and never really could afford an instrument of my own. But when I was about 15 years old, I met this girl who was really very talented, and I said, you know, you got to show me how to play some of these songs you're doing, because she was playing chords and doing verses of the folk songs of the 60s, and I just thought it was magical, you know, that she was able to do that. And it wasn't long after that till I actually attempted to make a guitar for the same girl, actually.
That's quite a jump. Just be learning some folk songs and then be like, well, I think I'm going to make a guitar.
Well, my background, you know, it's like if you see something you like, you know, you look at it and you go, well, I can make one of those, you know.
Were you into carpentry and stuff like that first?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had messed with woodworking a lot. I had done some aircraft woodworking and, you know, some fairly, you know, technically demanding woodworking even as a youngster. But I had no idea what I was getting into when I tried to make a guitar.
Yeah, and this is not an electric guitar.
This was an acoustic guitar.
Exactly.
And it's funny because it kind of parallels a story that Homer likes to tell, or used to like to tell when he was living. He had tried to make a fiddle out of matchsticks, and he had glued it all together and used something like library paste. And it sounded great until the first time it rained, and the humidity just caused the whole thing to collapse. Well, my first guitar was made of small squares. The top was small squares of spruce that were set edge to edge because I didn't have a big piece of spruce for a guitar top. I couldn't afford one, didn't even know where to get one. And so I pieced this thing together. It looks like a checkerboard. All I have is a picture of it. I don't know whatever became of it, but the Beatles were still together when I built that guitar.
How long does it take to build a guitar nowadays?
Uninterrupted, which of course doesn't happen, but uninterrupted, I could build one in a couple of weeks.
Do you prefer building guitars as opposed to other instruments, or is that pretty much your main thing?
Well, guitars is the area where I have the most experience, but we do build mandolins and dulcimers and ukuleles, and some of the simpler instruments like the dulcimers are actually a lot of fun to build. The guitars are my main area of strength, I think, because that's where my resume is, my experience. Of course, I used to work for Collings Guitars in Austin, and, you know, I really sort of did my postgraduate in guitar making down there in Texas. So that's really where my strongest credentials are. And, yeah, you could call it my comfort zone. Yeah.
I understand you use a lot of Kentucky woods.
We focus on Kentucky woods partly because of the preference of the apprentices. Almost everyone that comes in there wants that connection to their place. You know, they want to build out of what belongs to them, not only actually belongs to them, a wood that they can obtain themselves, but they want to use wood that belongs to the place where they live. You know, it's a very rooted kind of a process.
What specifically about the wood of Kentucky is unique other than just where it's from? Is there something about the material itself?
Well, we have some really great materials. We have a black locust, which seems to grow in just a few places. And that black locust is a wonderful tone wood. It's interchangeable with some of the tropical rosewoods that the commercial makers prefer. But we also really, really like the red spruce that grows up at some of the higher elevations. Also goes by the name Adirondack spruce. A wonderful, wonderful tone wood, highly sought after. And, of course, we've really, really leaned heavily with all of our instruments. We've used a lot of Kentucky black walnut. The black walnut, it does come in big, beautiful boards. It's been sawn there for 100 years, and we actually find very, very old material down there that I would have to say is pretty exceptional. Makes a great guitar.
When you say tone wood, you're talking about a particular character of the wood, which makes it good for instrument making.
Yeah, actually, you can actually hold the piece of wood up and tap it, and it'll ring. You know, you'll hear a bell-like quality to it, just sort of almost like you're ringing a piece of brass. And when you get that in a board, you know that you've got something that you need to do with it. And really, that's the whole magic of what we do, is you start out with a board and you end up with music. And that's just something you never get tired of doing.
Doug, how long have you been doing radio?
Not Downtown Radio Hour. Went online about 3 years ago. And I've been in and out of radio. As a kid, I actually worked in radio. You know, back when small market stations were around, I actually worked at WMST, Voice of the Gateway, at 105.5 on your FM dial. I had a country show. But the show that we do now, we play traditional and original music. We sort of alternate back and forth from the old-timey musicians that are in our circle down there to the songwriters of Appalachia. And there's such a stronghold of that kind of thing down there that the show just sort of had to be done so that these people would have a venue. And it's worked out really well. People are lining up for our next show. We actually record the show right there in the Luthry, right in the among the workbenches and the sawdust, you know, right in the middle of everything.
Do you often get to take the show on the road?
About as far as we've gotten historically has been the Knott County Trail Ride. You know, we've gotten out there on the mountain with it. It's the first time we've ever went out of town.
Yeah.
It's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Real exciting for a small town like Hyndman.
Yeah.
Hyndman's only got about 700 or 800 people in the town. So, you know, for us to come out and be represented in great big Lexington, that's pretty exciting.
That's fun. Yeah. And it must be exciting to know you're getting an award named after someone that you knew and were close with.
Yeah, that's so strange. Yeah. I mean, when we lost Homer, we were kind of shocked. I mean, really grieving. And I started hearing people talking about, you know, I found a Ledford over here, or I found a Ledford over there. And, you know, it kind of poleaxed me there for a while. I was realizing that my friend had become a category of collectible. And now I'm a little more adjusted to it, but apparently now he's also an award. So, knowing Homer personally, as I did for many years, I think I was about halfway through my first guitar project whenever I went and begged Homer for help. It was probably about 1970, so I knew him for a good long time. And it's fair to say that he was my principal mentor as I was learning the craft. I certainly imposed on him often. And, you know, to receive an award with his name on it, that's pretty special for me.
Knowing him like you did,
yeah.
How do you think he would feel knowing that he is an award now? And also, a part two of that question is, how do you think he'd feel knowing that you're the recipient?
Well, I don't know about me being the recipient. Now, that's something that I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about. I know that Homer would love the fact that there's an award going around with his name on it. He was never reluctant to leave his name on things. I mean, he was one of those people that would write, if you made some little jig or a fixture or a clamp or something, he would write, "Homer C. Ledford made this." And because I think he was acutely aware of the fact that he'd be gone someday, and what would be left to him, in large part, would be these artifacts, this work that he'd done, and these beautiful instruments that he made. I don't know what kind of report card I would get from Homer in 2017. I guess we'll never know. It's probably just as well.
Well, he saw some of the instruments you made, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was very complimentary and very encouraging always. And, you know, I would, as I got older, you know, I'd make guitars and take them over to him, and he'd be very humble about it. He'd say, well, these are nice. These are a lot nicer than my guitars, Doug. You're the guitar maker. I just make dulcimers. And I'd say, yeah, right, Homer. Thanks.
Of course, he could make anything he wanted to, I imagine.
I think he did make anything he wanted to. He really, and you know, that's one of the things that I think needs to be remembered about Homer, as much as the dulcimer making and his stagecraft. You know, he was a great showman. But the fact that he had such a zeal for invention, he loved to build things that no one else had made. And for him, you know, the idea of a dulcibro or a dulcitar or, you know, on and on and on and on, I think that was one of the reasons that he kept working, because he always wanted to do the fun thing. You know, he would kind of save those up for Fridays. I do remember that. He was doing his production work on his bread and butter, which were the dulcimers. And of course, he made more than 6,000 of those, I think. But at the end of the week, he would save himself out some time to play. And that's when he would make things that no one else had ever made before, just to see if they'd work. And usually they work really well.
Do you have some of his instruments in your collection?
Well, I have, yes, I do. And I have all of the patterns and the blueprints down there at the Museum of the Mountain Dulcimer. We're fortunate to be stewards of a lot of Homer's shop notes and, you know, the documentation, and also the actual physical molds that he built a lot of the instruments in, that some of which are, I think, in the Smithsonian now. I mean, you know, some really one-off, extremely innovative instruments.
Is this a place that's open to the public? Can people come and share an interest in this? They can come and visit?
Well, we actually have two buildings in downtown Hyman. One has our gallery and our the main studios. It's called the Cody Building. In the front, at the street level, it has the Museum of the Mountain Dulcimer. Now, part of that collection is housed over at the what we call the Boland Building, which is our Luthry studio, just a few doors down the street. And there's an awful lot about Homer and the history of the Mountain Dulcimer there, you know, as well. Of course, one of the reasons that we have pursued the history of the Mountain Dulcimer is because Hyman is the birthplace of the modern Mountain Dulcimer as we know it. The hourglass-shaped dulcimer that is long and, you know, light and delicate, that has the little heart sound holes. Well, the genesis of that style of instrument actually occurred right there in Knott County in the 1800s. And we, you know, when you go that far back, when you're doing research, you know, there's always someone, you know, saying, well, there's this guy over in Huntington, and there's this person here and there. But we're pretty sure that the Mountain Dulcimer, as we know it, was born right there about 15 miles out of town.
Are you a native of Hyman? Are you from, or did you?
No, I'm from Mount Sterling.
Mount Sterling, okay.
They called me down to Hyman. We have a real strong support from people coming from outside of the state, actually from as far away as Yokohama, Japan. We had a fellow last year who came down to build an Uncle Ed Thomas dulcimer, you know, there, come to the source and build a, you know, an authoritative replica. Well, we teach people how to do that there, and that seems to be a real strong draw. We just had a workshop with a young lady from Maine and a fellow from Germantown, Ohio. They went through and spent the week there. So that's, as far as the School of Luthry goes, that's one of the ways that we share it. And, of course, people come and spend a week there. So it's significant.
When is the festival?
In November. I think it's the second weekend in November. I don't want to throw the dates out there because I always get them wrong, but it's not the very first weekend, but the second one.
Doug, is there a website that people can go and check out what you do? I'm sure you have photographs and things like that where people can look.
Yeah, well, we have a website called artisancenter.net, which is the website of the Appalachian Artisan Center. Right now, that's the main way to get to everything we do. We're building a website for the School of Luthery. We're very fortunate to have Malcolm Wilson has been taking images for it. He's done some great photographic work. In fact, he was in the class with that bunch we just had through, and he's working on building us a website just for the School of Lutheran. But right now you can go to artisancenter.net, and you can also find archived programs of the Not Downtown Radio Hour. You don't have to wonder about it. You can go there and see.
Doug, thank you for coming in, and congratulations on your award.
Thank you very much.
Doug Nazelrod is the Master Luthier at the Appalachian School of Luthery in Hindman, Kentucky. He's also the winner of the Kentucky Folklife Program's 2017 Homer Ledford Award. And he's the host of the popular radio program, the Not Downtown Radio Hour. Thank you for listening to our Artbeat podcast. I'm Joe Conkright for WUKY.